As the coronavirus spread in 2020, touching virtually every country in the world, Doctors Without Borders adapted or scaled up their ongoing activities and started new activities wherever a pressing need arose. The Czech branch of MSF also launched COVID-19-focused projects at home, offering its experience and know-how from crisis situations around the world. I spoke to COVID coordinator at Doctors Without Borders and the organization's former head, Pavel Gruber, about the new challenges posed by COVID-19.
Well, 2020 was obviously a super difficult year for everybody. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic has a huge impact on our work globally. But in the meantime, we should not forget that the fact that we have this global pandemic does not mean that the war stops, that the natural disaster stops. So we still need to follow the original streams of our work together with the new challenges posed by the COVID-19.
Doctors Without Borders played a key role in helping in the migrant crisis. How much has the situation worsened in crisis area and in migrant camps due to the pandemic?
The reality is that the path over the Mediterranean Sea still remains the deadliest and the most dangerous migrant path in the world. And this has not changed. The conditions in Libya remain so bad that people are aware about the risks they take when they try to cross the Mediterranean. But they are escaping such a horrible condition that they undergo this risk. And in the meantime, European countries continue to put obstacles for life-saving organizations such as Doctors Without Borders. So this year was extremely difficult for us.
What about conditions in migrant camps?
Of course, the situation, COVID-19 is worsening the situation, and no matter, generally the camps are a place which you can say is an ideal ground for the epidemic spread, no matter if you talk about COVID-19 or other diseases. There is a huge concentration of the people, very limited medical assistance. So, these are ideal hotspots for the spread of the disease.
Where are Doctors Without Borders helping now, and how are these places selected? Do you respond to calls for help, and how long do you stay in one place?
Well, this is very diverse. You can have some emergency operations which can last only months, and then you have a long term operation with the countries such as Democratic Republic of Congo where we stay for years. And if you ask me where, today it's more than 70 countries, so it would be a bit difficult to list them all. If to mention few hotspots, it still remains Yemen, Congo, which I mentioned, Central African Republic, and a few others.
Where are you sending Czech and Slovak doctors?
We don't have any specific area that we could say that Czech and Slovak doctors go to this area. So they go where their profile is needed most and where their experience is matching. So this year there was one curiosity, which is not very, very often, but just by chance, there were five Czechs and Slovaks together in Sierra Leone.
Do they choose where they want to go, or do you send them somewhere? Can they choose?
They cannot choose, but they can say no. It means we offer them the country of the mission. We say your profile is now most needed on the projects XYZ in the country XY, and the person can say yes, I go, or can say no, I would prefer, for example, less dangerous context, and then we try to look for less dangerous or different context for the person.
In view of the travel restrictions due to the coronavirus pandemic, how much of a problem is it to get doctors and medical equipment where you need them?
Well, obviously, it's a challenge. It's making all the supply and personal travel more difficult. We are an emergency organization, so we are used to overcome these challenges, and we manage somehow.
Given your experience in helping in crisis situations, dealing with epidemics, you were also called on to help at home. How have you been helping at home in the past year, and in what way was it different from helping abroad?
Yeah, well, this is a historic moment for the office in Prague, because it's the first time where we started any activities in our home country. Actually, it was connected with the second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, when we were looking into the situation in the country, and doing the needs assessment, we are trying to identify the gaps, and such gaps which would match the experience which we can offer. And actually, what we identified was the situation in the nursing homes, in all kinds of the nursing homes. And what we try to bring in is our global experience in IPC, what means infection prevention and control. Because the situation there is most of the staff are non-medical. These are the social workers. And now they are forced to deal with a situation which they are not trained and not equipped for.
One of the things your doctors emphasized was the need for teams to be well coordinated, for the doctors and nurses to know each other and function well together. Was that a problem in the pandemic, because different countries sent their doctors and nurses to help elsewhere where there was a crisis? Or are Doctors Without Borders trained to jump into the middle of the action, so to speak, and function well?
We are really used to jump, and the teams are always multinational. That's why for most of these situations we have quite strict and standard protocols. Also, we have the tools we use, the boxes and the equipment is standardized. So, for example, if you are sent and you know it's a cholera epidemic, it does not matter if it's a cholera epidemic in Haiti or Asia or Africa or anywhere else, and it does not matter which nationalities are presented in your team, you still know what you find in your cholera boxes and you still know what you need to do.
What I meant was, here in the Czech Republic, where hospitals suddenly got help, doctors from other countries or, you know, doctors from other regions who weren't trained to work together, the doctors and nurses, was that a problem? Was that something you could help with?
To my knowledge, finally, the assistance of the foreign experts was quite limited, and it was really in the level of the expertise and knowledge sharing. And it's precisely for the reason you are mentioning. To parachute a foreign medical into a hospital, no matter if it's a Czech hospital or a British hospital, is not an easy thing. So that's why, finally, as I mentioned, to my knowledge, the support was limited to the exchange of the experience and knowledge.
What is the hardest part of it? Do some very good doctors find that they can't handle it psychologically?
Well, it can happen, but this is a measure we try to minimize by our quite tough selection process. Because you can imagine that sending somebody across the globe and discovering after few weeks or few months that the person cannot handle it, it's quite expensive in terms of the travel cost, but it's even more expensive for the team, because usually the teams, you have one anesthetist, you have one orthopedist, and if the team is missing this profile, it's really hurting. So that's why we the most important for us is the motivation of the person, not only the skills, but why he wants to join us. And we need to know that there is no negative motivation, or we need to undercover any possible risks which would lead to the situation you described. That means that the person discovers he cannot handle it and is leaving the mission.
One of the things the doctors in this country and generally in the Western world found hard to come to terms with was having to decide who to help when faced with a lack of ventilators. I suppose that this is something that you have to accept on missions in poverty-stricken and war-ravaged parts of the world. Could you advise doctors here at home how to make such snap decisions and how to live with them?
Well, this process is called triage, and it's quite standardized. So, of course, as you say, it's extremely difficult, and thank God I'm not a medical person, so I was never put in this situation. But when I'm debriefing my colleagues, that when they face the situation, it's really one of the most difficult. On the other hand, it's really it's standardized. So you have protocols which you simply follow, and the only criteria can be the medical criteria. So these are the only criteria which you follow, and you divide the patients. For example, the mass casualty which you are describing, it means the influx of dozens of patients where you need to quickly sort them, who gets the assistance first, who can wait a little bit and who can wait longer, and where no assistance will help. So this process called triage, it's well known by the doctors, no matter if we talk about Europe or anywhere else.
You have now been helping in developed countries with excellent healthcare systems, where the health systems often came close to collapse. What kind of advice do you give there?
So it's a difficult question. You need to prepare yourself for these situations. Usually, as an emergency organization, we try to prepare for the. If you have two scenarios, the good one and the bad one, we would say try to prepare for the bad one. That's because if you are prepared, you increase your chances that you do you get through the situation.
When I've spoken to doctors back from an MSF mission in the past, they always said it took them a few months to recover from the emotional experience of what they saw and lived through there. How long will it take the world to recover from the pandemic emotionally, do you think?
Oh, it's a tricky question. How long the world will recover? Again, we must see the impact is very different in different parts of the world. Probably some countries have much better measures than the others how to cope with it. Of course, it's a huge shock for the world what happened. So, well, maybe I can answer this way. I would say I hope that the impact will be we increase the preparedness for the infection diseases. We increase our preparedness for the next pandemic, which can be much worse.
And emotionally?
Emotionally, the most difficult is for those directly impacted. So it means for those who lost their loved ones. And it's difficult. It's a difficult situation. When you first ask me how our colleagues cope with the situation when they come back from the missions, we give them the support. We give them different kinds of the mental health support, peer-to-peer support. So these people who lost their loved ones during this pandemic, they should also receive this help if they need it.
The world is now pinning its hopes on a vaccine. But many people in Europe are distrustful of it. I suppose this is not something you see in the developing world. How important is a pro-vaccine campaign in your eyes at this point?
From MSF perspective, I can say we know vaccination is one of the most effective measures that the health system has, also in terms of the financing. So probably you are right that there is quite some hesitations we can feel within the society. So there must be some support from the leaders, and some campaign probably would be very useful to convince the population about the benefits of the vaccination. And if I may, if you ask me about the vaccination, I think there is also point B. And again, it's an experience of our organization, which is global. So now I'm not talking anymore only about the country here, but globally, there is an aspect B, and that must be the vaccination must be made accessible to everybody, not only to the most rich nations and countries.
This pandemic is far from over. How do you see MSF helping in the coming year?
I don't think that much will change. We must be ready that the pandemic is kind of cross-cutting issue, getting through our missions. So I don't think there will be a major change compared to what we did in the past year.
What would you like to see in the coming year?
Definitely more respect, less fighting, because obviously we know that the worst and the case which is causing the most of the displacement is fighting. It's not natural disasters. So less of this, more respect, more understanding that really when people do escape their homes, that you do not escape your home just because you want to have a nice TV. It's not an easy decision to leave your home. So usually the reasons why people do it are very severe, and I would hope for more understanding in this area.
Pavel Gruber, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for speaking to us.
Thank you very much.